Hi, I'm Becky Sims, and welcome to Behind the Future, the podcast from Aspiration Digital. We're here to unlock digital careers, one conversation at a time. On each episode, I'll be joined by a student co-host. We'll be interviewing amazing people from across the industry to learn about how they got started in their career and what it is that they do. Let's dive in to find out the secrets to their success. Wow, Ashia was brilliant, wasn't she? I'd already had a sneak peek because I'd seen her speak on stage before, and so I knew she had an interesting story to tell. What did you find most impactful?
I found that you really need networking to, like, I don't know, to help you grow in your career, and that you have to find loads of opportunities and take them.
Yeah, definitely. And create them. Like, go knocking for them. Go looking for them. I think, for a teaser for the start of this episode, there's a real story around sometimes things don't work out, but then they do eventually. Mm-hmm. And I think that's such a good message to take away, isn't it? That, because you do get knockbacks in life, and actually you don't want them to knock you down. You just want them to get you feeling stronger to go for the next thing. So, wow, let's let our audience enjoy the episode. So over to the episode that we have with Ashia, who works at AWS.
Hi, I'm Ashia, and I'm taking you behind the future.
Welcome to another episode of Behind the Future. We're in for a real treat today. We're going to be talking a bit more about the technical world, which is exciting. But first of all, Ashley, you're joining me as my co-presenter. Yeah. Tell us a bit about yourself.
So I'm Ashley. I'm 17. I currently study media, business and economics in hopes that I will go into business and marketing in the future. And hopefully this will help me.
Amazing. I think it might do. Yeah. And Ashia, welcome. You're our guest today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. We're so excited to learn a bit more about you. So tell us a bit about yourself.
My name is Ashia. I work at a company called Amazon Web Services, which is part of Amazon, the Amazon.com that everyone knows and loves. But it's a cloud computing company, and I am a solutions architect.
That sounds impressive, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Ashia, what exactly is... a solutions architect?
Yeah, that's a great question. it's a great question because it's a job title that doesn't necessarily translate outside of my company or my or the industry. But essentially what I do and what solutions architects do at AWS is we work with the companies and the customers that want to leverage AWS services, technologies and features to meet their business objectives. And we help them by being technical guiders, counselors, consultants throughout that journey, the cloud journey.
Amazing. And how did you get into that?
Yeah, it's interesting. It wasn't super straightforward. So it depends what timeline we're
talking
about.
Let's go all the way back. Go back, I guess, to a similar age when you were at A-levels. Yeah. I'd love to know that story.
Yeah, so when I was your age, Ashley, a few years ago, I studied at A-level computer science along with geography, economics and maths. But I knew I wanted to be in some kind of tech role. And around that time, I don't know if they still do this, like, quiz thing, but there was like a careers quiz that you used to be able to do in school that would kind of tell you, based on the things that you're good at, the subjects that you take and the things that you like, what types of job roles you might be suited to in the future. Yeah,
so that I sounds familiar. What it's called,
but yeah, something like that. And I did that, and like one of the answers on my quiz or one of the results was you could be in one of the many tech roles that's going to come into existence in the next 5 and 10 years. So it wasn't super defined, let's say, my career path or the things that I knew I was going to be doing. But I kind of focused on tech. I studied computer science into university, and I landed an internship at Amazon after graduating. So I came out of uni with the first class, and I was like, this is great. I went to Amazon. I actually lived in Luxembourg for 5 months to do my internship there. But it wasn't solutions architecture. It was a business intelligence engineering role, which was good. And it gave me a great experience and a great exposure to Amazon as a company. But it wasn't exactly what I wanted to do. So I started to look for other roles that I could go into as a graduate, based on, again, what I'd studied, the things I'd learned so far as a business intelligence engineer. And I came across this random job posting for a program called TechU, And I read the description and it was absolutely perfect. Like, it was like someone had written up the description of my dream job and my dream role. And that's how I got into solutions architecture. So it was kind of by accident. It was just from knowing what I didn't want to do as well as what I did want to do. And finding through kind of networking through my company what kind of roles I could go into at Amazon Web Services, and having the opportunity to do like a graduate program. So that was a great enabler to get into a role that most people at graduate stage don't get into, or don't have the opportunity to show the skills that they need or have the experience that is required to be a solutions architect. So
love that. Yeah. I feel like you you very casually said, I landed an internship at AWS.
Yeah.
I'm sure you didn't just wake up one morning and suddenly you're in Luxembourg. No. Tell us a bit about that, because that's amazing. Because I imagine that the amount of people that go for something like that is huge.
Yeah.
So then to be one of the people that gets that internship is really impressive. So how did that happen?
Yeah, there's two main things to call out. in terms of how I got that role. One, I had applied for Amazon in, I think, my second year of university to do a placement year in London, and I got rejected from that role. So it was a long time ago, so now I don't actually remember what the job title even was or what that position was, but I did know I wanted to work at Amazon, and it was a shame to have got part of the way through the kind of
application process.
Thank you. Yeah. Part of the way through the application process and then end up not getting the role that I wanted. But with lots of applications, there is the option to kind of keep your details on file for other opportunities that might come up in the future. So at that point, I sort of put Amazon to the side, but I knew that they had a copy of my CV, and they had some data essentially already on me from the fact that I had gone partway through the application process. So that's one thing that I call out, because it is, I think, important to be transparent about the fact that you don't get all the roles that you apply to straight away, but the opportunities can resurface themselves. So the second call out is that I was actually contacted by a recruiter directly on LinkedIn in my final year, who said, hi, kind of based on your LinkedIn profile and some of the things that we've already seen from you, I think that you would be a great fit for this role. It's business intelligence engineering. We're hiring people and relocating them from other parts of Europe into Luxembourg. Would you be interested in applying? And that is how I got the role.
Amazing. Really interesting. Yeah. So you mentioned a placement year, and obviously it didn't work out with Amazon. Did you end up doing that somewhere else?
Yes, I did do a placement year, and I'm so glad that I did. A lot of people feel that doing a placement year is just going to take a year away from the time that they have at university, or it's just going to delay the time that it takes to graduate. But it was such good exposure to the tech industry, to the corporate world, to professional life. It was also a really good opportunity for me to learn kind of the skills that people don't speak to you about as much, I think, at university or prior, like when you're studying at school. So just things like your self-awareness, knowledge of your working styles, how you interact with other people, how you deal with challenges.
Amazing. It's so interesting, isn't it?
You mentioned LinkedIn earlier before. How big of a role did LinkedIn play in your career path?
I think it was quite big, actually. So LinkedIn, I think now, is talked about a lot in corporate life and professionals, like between professional circles and networks. It's a lot about building your network, showing who you are, building a personal brand. I didn't have all of that in mind at the time, but I just knew it was important to have a professional presence and representation of myself online. So something away from other social media kind of networks or platforms, where I could talk about all of the things that I was interested in, the things that I had achieved. And it gave me the opportunity, crucially, it gave me the opportunity to make connections with people who I otherwise probably wouldn't have, or to see things that I wouldn't have had exposure to. So getting the knowledge of conferences or hackathons, or seeing what other projects people were working on, like all of that information was really helpful to for me to see, and the people who I networked with or connected with at that time were, I'd say they were useful in just kind of creating the foundations of my professional network. So yeah.
Love that. It's such a good tool, isn't it? Yes. When would you recommend getting started? Like, is it something while you're still doing your A-levels, you go get yourself set up?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe, potentially. I don't think there's necessarily a one time that's massively better than another. I definitely would say if you are at university, I'm just saying that because that's what I did. Yeah. If you're at university, because then you can start by sharing information about what you're studying, the modules that you're doing, mm-hmm. projects that you're working on, if you're doing an internship, or even if you're doing like an insight week or something. But that's also stuff that you can share when you are doing your A-levels, or if you decide not to do A-levels and you're doing an apprenticeship. It's that probably like 16, 17, 18 range is good to start thinking about building a LinkedIn profile, and figuring out how you can use it as a tool, as well, to support it, whatever it is that you want to do in your career.
Yeah, it's such a good tool. Yeah. It really is. Yeah. We've definitely heard a lot about LinkedIn, I'm sure. on podcast episodes, because it's the professional network, isn't it? It's it's how we can meet and stay connected and use it. How was relocating to Luxembourg? Because that's quite a big thing, isn't it?
It was a big thing. Really, really exciting. Just, I think just the concept of moving away from home and moving away to a different country for work was it almost felt surreal, because it was something that I knew people did, and I knew that companies relocated people, but I always thought it was something that happened like way later on in life, or once you're at a certain point in your career that you're so in demand that you get, you know...
Yeah, shipped off yeah, somewhere shipped exciting. Off. Yeah,
shipped off. You get business class seats, and so it was almost surreal that it was happening to me at the stage that I was in. But again, it's just one of those experiences that I had that really opened my eyes to what is possible, and it gave me more insight into the company that I was working for as well, and how they did their operations and where they actually needed people to be. It definitely is not an easy thing to move to a different country. I have a lot of respect for the people who are able to move as individuals and move their families over and come all the way across the world. Like, Luxembourg and London are not super far away from each other. And I worked with colleagues who come from entirely different continents. There are a lot of challenges that I just didn't expect.
Yeah.
In terms of actual logistics of moving and being somewhere else and having to find a place to live and doing documentation and adjusting to a new way of life. But I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. How is it working for someone like Amazon, obviously, because it's a huge business?
Yeah.
Does it feel as big as it is, or in your teams, do you get that kind of smaller feel in your teams? What's it like?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. So the company is massive, a huge amount of employees, and there's so much going on at a worldwide level. So the things that everyone kind of knows and sees of Amazon, like Amazon.com and Amazon Prime and Alexa. Then there's the layer below that. So the things that most people in the public don't see or don't know in terms of the projects that are happening, what initiatives we're running, kind of company-wide, VP level or executive level kind of decisions that trickle down to smaller, like local teams. And that gives you that like big company feel, knowing that I have colleagues in France and Seattle and New York who are all kind of doing similar things or doing something to contribute to the company wherever they are. So there is that big company feel. But then I have the genuine pleasure and honor of being in a great team that's quite close knit as well. So in my team of solutions architects, that's where it's more of a kind of small, concentrated, focused, small company, almost like a startup kind of vibe.
Yeah, I can imagine that. And I'm guessing you're always learning, because you're still young and fresh into your career in many ways. So like, and we're in a space where things are moving quickly, aren't they? I imagine AI is coming into what you're doing. And I'd love to know a bit more about that.
Oh gosh, yeah, there is. I have not stopped learning the whole time from school, like from A levels onwards. It's just been a constant journey of learning and discovering this whole concept of your known unknowns and your unknown unknowns as well.
Yeah.
So there are things that I have through learning new things, whether that's new technologies, whether that is just new concepts, I've become aware of the fact that there is so much more that I don't know, and there's so much more that I am yet to learn. So when it is, for example, now generative AI is a huge thing, and it has been for the past maybe 12 or 18 months, there's a lot that I have learned in terms of AWS services or how our customers are using them. But then there's also a lot that I'm yet to learn about how this stuff works under the hood and where it might go in the future. It's really fun. It's super challenging to try to learn so much. But yeah, it is all part of the journey, and it is sometimes it is indicative of where I am in my career and the fact that I'm a few years into it. There are some skills that are kind of fundamental that I'm learning now that are going to carry me through the rest of my career, and things that I see my colleagues already sort of have a handle on, whether that's time management or conflict resolution and those type of soft skills that take a bit of a while to hone in on and really practice. But yeah, all of those things form part of my learning journey.
Yeah, and those skills are really interesting, aren't they? Because they're the things that we don't have subjects at school that are named those things. Yeah. You don't even know, and you're already practicing them at school. You've sort conflicts out and whatnot, but you don't realize, but you also don't know what's the professional approach to this, because we're not just gonna argue this out. How are we gonna handle this thing that we don't agree on and we don't see eye to eye on, or how do I get someone to buy into my idea? Mm-hmm. And what do you think's been your biggest journey on kind of a softer skill that you've had to learn?
I think that's a really good question. A few come to mind, but I think that my top two would be leadership and ownership. So leadership in the sense of what maybe comes to mind for most people is leadership, like you have to manage a team or you have to have people that you're delegating tasks to in order to be a leader. But that's actually not the case. Mm-hmm. You can lead a project. You can lead just by collaborating with one other person. You could lead by being a thought leader, like by the things that you are doing as an individual. So I think that's probably been the biggest journey for me, is how do I show up as a leader, and almost, again, kind of going back to that idea of being in a startup-esque kind of company, how can I be almost entrepreneurial in the things that I'm doing, and being quite enterprising and leading from setting an example. That's leadership. So that's one big thing. And then the other most significant skill, like soft skill, that I've learned that doesn't really come up much in school is ownership. So to say, this is something that I am going to drive the outcome for.
Yeah.
And I'm going to actually do the actions that are required to make it happen, whether that's reaching out to another person to help me, whether that is being the one to send the email or to do the presentation or to arrange the meeting, like actually being an owner of an outcome or a deliverable rather than leaving it to other people to to get things done, it's an interesting kind of process, going from like maybe school or A levels where you're sort of told what you're expected to deliver and when, and you have deadlines and you have due dates and you have a bit more structure. In the working world, I found that you have a lot of autonomy over what you own and deliver and how you want to do it. So becoming comfortable with ownership. Yeah.
It's a really big one, isn't it? Yeah. Does that feel like something at the moment you don't have much opportunity to experience, or?
Yeah, it does.
Just a quick note from me. We'd love you to hit the subscribe button. This helps us more than you might realize when it comes to growing this podcast, ensuring we can bring you the best guests possible. Thank you. Back to the episode.
Did you face challenges throughout your learning journey? For example, like, was there ever a time you was unsure that this is what you want to do?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And going back to what Becky said before about my placement year, so I did, for that year, I was a data engineer. So I worked in a data engineering team, and it was also in the time of the pandemic. So when we, like, the whole world shifted from kind of 5 days in the office to fully remote working. So there was lots of challenges in a practical sense during that year, but also there was the challenge of realizing that as much as I enjoyed being in that data engineering team, as much as it was amazing to see the things that I was able to build, I did data pipelines, I learned how to code in Python. That was my first ever hands-on experience with AWS, and I was using some services for storage. some storage services and some like computing services, and it was amazing, but it also just didn't really represent what I wanted to do with the rest of my career. I was kind of ready to just leave it there. Leave it at the placement year and keep doing something else, or keep trying to explore other things that I was good at until I landed on the one that I wanted to actually stick with. So I hope that answers the question. I suppose the piece of advice there is to be open-minded about the opportunities that you do get. So making the most of that 12 months is partly what led to me doing what I'm doing now, where I'm really happy and I'm in the right space and in the right role. Yeah.
What does your day-to-day look like as a solutions architect? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, what happens day to day? What kind of, for the audience listening, yeah, what does that look like?
Yeah, every day is different, which is great. Mm-hmm. I have some things that are pretty similar or standard across most days of the week, or let's say a typical week, maybe.
Yeah.
I have a set of customers who I work with, and those customers, so they are three companies who use AWS as part of their business operations. So a large chunk of what I do will be speaking to people like the cloud architects, the engineers, the heads of engineering about what it is that they want to achieve using AWS, gathering those requirements and understanding, is it a new artificial intelligence project? Is it databases? Is it something to do with cost optimization? And then once I have that information from them, whether that's being on calls with them or emails or even in person, then from there I will typically go back and work on whichever material I need to deliver to them. And that can be architecture diagrams, which is great, sometimes proofs of concept or demos, so actually showing them how a new service or technology works. And learning in the process, again, going back to learning those services, learning how they work, trying to enable those customers as best as I can to meet their business requirements. And that enablement can take lots of different forms. So there is the need for my soft skills really comes in, because sometimes I have to do presentations, sometimes I have to go in and talk to a team of engineers that could be 10 developers who are all hands-on on their laptops doing something, asking questions. And that's probably one of my favorite parts of the role, is actually seeing people playing with AWS, and whether that's coding or clicking around in the console or building something. That's kind of the main part, the customer part.
It sounds really interesting, yeah, doesn't it?
It's interesting. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
And did you know you wanted to work with customers? Because obviously technology stood out as something you wanted to do from your computer science background. But yeah, did you know that the customer bit, or is that something that kind of came about and you were like, actually, I really like this?
That's something that I knew from studying computer science. One of the things that I found was that I had so many peers who were great at coding. They were great developers, but they weren't able to make the translation between what they were doing or what they were building to people outside of computer science or people that didn't understand the technology. And that was something that I was really passionate about, was bringing the power and the fun and the all of the incredible capabilities that tech has to customers and to businesses and to organizations who actually need to leverage it. So being someone sort of in between the two, in between kind of tech and business or tech and customers, was something that I really, really wanted to do, even within a technical role. So it was like this vague idea, which now looking back, I know that's kind of what I was kind of creating the solutions architect job role in my mind. But I was like, how can I be someone who is a technical expert and has technical expertise that lends itself directly to a business, a consumer or a customer? So yeah, it was just the, I suppose, like the self-awareness and the knowledge of like my soft skills alongside my hard skills was what made me know that yes, I wanted to work with like customers rather than being in, for example, a data engineering team where I'm just working with other engineers as the bulk of my role.
I love that, because also having worked with a lot of technical people, you're right, some people can bridge the gap really well and other people speak a foreign language of tech, but you go, I don't understand. And the thing is, I know you're really smart and I know you know what you mean, but I don't understand. So actually being able to bridge that gap and bring that to life is a real skill set, and really rewarding as well to be able to help customers. Do you get to, so if you help a customer work out a solution, do you then see it through, or does that then go to a different team to be able to kind of help them run the project?
So typically solutions architects, we will do the kind of, I'll give you the analogy that I use is when an architect designs a building, they have the blueprints and the measurements, and they will typically hand that over to the people that are going to do the plumbing, and they're going to build the walls, and the people that are going to build the foundations, and then they hand it over to, once the building is created, they might hand it over to a team who's going to do the maintenance and the cleaning and, you know, making sure that there's nothing wrong. So it's very similar in the world of tech with solutions architects. So we kind of do the blueprints, we do the diagrams, we explain how components will come together in that project. Then we can hand it over to people like specialists to give specialist advice, or we can hand it over to consultants who will do hands-on development. They'll do hands-on things like helping with application migration, and that will be their role in the project and getting things to that final stage where the business can use it.
Amazing. And you get to see it all finished
sometimes. Sometimes, most of the time, sometimes, yes, we get to see it finish, and we know that going from a conversation, it could be literally a conversation that was had with someone in, you know, like the head of the engineering team or the head of the cyber or architecture team, and how the conversation around what the business needs, the AWS services that are in scope for that, how AWS can help. There is a whole process that you get to see to the very end. And then the customer says it's in production, it's running, it's helping to serve our customers. So you know that the business that you've worked with is now doing a better job for the customers that they serve. And that is a great full circle moment. It can sometimes take months. It can sometimes take years. I've heard from other solutions architects to get really big projects done. But that is,
That's the thing when you're doing important big work though, isn't it? Yeah. It doesn't happen overnight. So, very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
How would you say you manage time like efficiently to complete these projects?
I'll be honest, I wish I was a little bit better at time management. It's something that I do struggle with. But the best approach that I've learned, or what I'm using so far, is to take time to plan my time, first of all. Yeah. So it used to be the case where I would just let the days and the weeks kind of just come at me, and I would almost be batting off tasks as they came onto my plate. But instead, now I take kind of regular check-ins and blocks of time that I've set up for myself, whether that's like, it could be 10 minutes to write a to-do list, or it could be a whole hour to like plan the rest of the month or the rest of the quarter. So I know what's important and what's not. And working using that prioritization really, really helps. when it comes to managing my time and where I'm going to spend the most of my time. So there are some things that are just more important to do than others. And that's where I know, you know, I need to focus on getting this done this week, whereas something else, I can pick that up next week instead. Another really useful resource or approach that I would share, I've forgotten what it's called, but there's a matrix. Mm-hmm. So you have urgency and impact, like this. So you are able to identify, and in each quadrant you have the things that are low urgency, low impact, all the way to high urgency and high impact. And just having that like physically in front of you on a page or on a screen is a really, really good way to say, oh, I can delegate this to somebody else, or I can just wait to get this done later, or I need to action this right now.
They're great, aren't they?
Yes.
You can do that for so many things. Like you can do value and impact, or time and impact, and you just plot it out, and it really helps you because you go, hold on, all the stuff over here, I do not want to do that. That is not a good use of time right now. I also thought that was impactful to say about taking time to manage your time, because I think otherwise it does run away, doesn't it? And suddenly you're in the thick of it and have no idea how you're going to get everything done.
Yeah.
I think one of my favorite tips on that as well is to manage expectations. Mm-hmm. There is the time that conflict happens and people get disappointed and upset is when they've had an expectation like, oh, I thought you were doing that for me this week.
Right.
Now, you maybe never had that conversation, but that's what they're thought was, or maybe they did think that they said it. But actually, if you can just make sure at all times you manage expectations, then normally people don't get upset as long as you can live up to those. So actually people don't mind if they say, oh, do you know what? It won't be 2 weeks probably until I can look at that. Or at least say no. They're not looking every day going, why has Ashia not come back to me on this? Why hasn't she finished this? Because they know not to expect it.
Yeah.
So absolutely. I think that was one of the things I learned really early on.
Yes.
A really good hack for managing things.
Yeah. And it's a good habit as well to just tie in communication into that as well. And over communicating is something that I've learned along those lines. So if you are working on something, in perhaps it's happening in stages, so you're doing kind of little bits at a time when you've got some time, it's good to just give updates every now and then, especially if you've got other stakeholders or you've got people that are waiting, just let them know, like, I haven't forgotten about it, I'm gonna get back to you, or I've made a little bit of progress here and some more should be coming through within the next couple of days or weeks. It can sometimes, it's a bit weird at first to do that, and it should never be an obligation, or you know, you're forced to feel like someone else is silently pressuring you, but it's just good to have that transparency with the people that you work with, and it really helps to build relationships with your colleagues and your peers where they know that they can trust you and what you're doing.
Definitely. So, I think those little I just thought you might want to know messages, they never do any harm. They only ever help, I think, because then at least the person knows, because there is nothing more frustrating than when we don't know what's going on. Like, I don't know, you think of if you're flying on holiday and you're at the airport and it just says delayed. That's really annoying, because you're like, is it delayed as in, well, I could go and have dinner now? Or is it delayed as in, I better stay by the gate because we're still going to go in 10 minutes? Yeah. But as soon as you know, you're like, oh, okay, I can go and plan. I can go and do something. I can go and spend some more of my holiday money at the airport. It's always good to manage expectations. Any other questions, Ashley?
Who or what inspired you to get into this career?
Answer potentially here. I don't know, maybe I don't.
I think I know the answer that you're thinking.
Oh, you're thinking a different one. Maybe you've had multiple forces. This is exciting.
I would say I had multiple. Okay, I'll say the one that I think Becky is.
Sorry, I feel like I've ruined you now. So,
not at all. And to your point, I have a great role model in my mum. She is someone who spent 20 years at another big tech company in a role that was slightly more on the business side. But I got to see her, like, she used to take me to the office when I was like a kid, but also around maybe 15 or 16 as well, when I was like studying and doing GCSEs and stuff, and was more able to understand that it wasn't just like a cool place, but my mum was actually doing work. And that was what that did is provide exposure for me on how, like, what does it look like when someone's going to the office and who do they talk to? And it's sort of demystified the whole idea of being a working professional in general. And the fact that it was my mum meant that she was so close and accessible, that it wasn't a working at a big tech company or working in an office in central London. Those weren't things that I thought were out of my reach. I had someone in my direct family who was doing them, so I just kind of thought it was normal.
Yeah.
And that's really, really something now, when I look back, it's something that I think helped in terms of just my mindset and what I thought was possible. That really helped me to not put barriers on myself and think like, oh, I haven't seen anybody else working at like one of the biggest tech companies in the world, so maybe it's not right for me. It was just something that I went for. So that's definitely, I have to definitely.
Well, and the sneak peek on that is the reason we met was I got to introduce you and your mum on stage when you did an amazing talk talking about women working in tech and the generations in tech. But who was the other inspiration then? I'm intrigued.
I was going to actually just say generally, so, and kind of going back to what I said about LinkedIn as well, the more I connected with people at things like career events, things like companies, there would be like company showcases, or there would be mixers or gatherings or hackathons, and just places where I could see other people around the same age as me or kind of going into similar industries or having like conversations like the ones that we're having now, like being able to conversate with people who were doing great things as data analysts or as penetration engineers or as business development managers. Those were all things, like, I can't pinpoint a specific person, but I can just say that it was something that for the years of, throughout the years of my A-levels and my degree at university, those were things that really kept me on track and motivated to have a career in tech and to establish myself as well and be in that position. That's maybe not the best answer because it's not one person, but it was just my environment and the places I was putting myself into that really kept me motivated.
Well, and I think that's the key thing there, is that you were putting yourself into these places and giving yourself the exposure. And actually, I think for the audience listening and potentially also for Ashley, is the thought that this can start now.
Yes.
Like, you can start going to get this exposure and finding these people. And actually, for all those students that are coming to Aspiration Digital, they're going to get some of that exposure.
Exactly.
For those students that don't, through the podcast, we're hoping they're going to get to hear some of these people, get to connect on LinkedIn, go and find these people, but get the confidence that actually you can go and look for meetups. I mean, using things like Eventbrite, you can go and search and find events.
Yeah.
And it's really daunting going to your first one on your own. I'm sure I can see it in your face.
Yeah. It's daunting for all of them. I'll be honest, not even just the first one. It can still be a bit scary to go to like a networking event, but they're always worth it. Going with somebody else is, like, at least for the first few, is always a good idea. Like, go with your friends, go with people that you study with, people that you have a common interest with. But yeah, go and spend that day at Aspiration Digital, for example, go and spend that day at whatever location, you know, listening to talks and presentations and getting the chance to meet other people. It's a really incredible thing that you can start doing now to it. Like, the benefits are, there are so many that we could talk about in terms of boosting your career, boosting your self-confidence, building your network. But yeah, it does start now.
Yeah,
it does definitely start now.
I think the only thing I would say, if you go with a friend, is how can you gamify it so you don't just talk to each other?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I think that's sometimes, and you know, I was in that trap. I would sometimes go with a colleague and then you'd be like, oh, should we just hang out? Because that's easier than talking to the other strangers. Yeah. Whereas actually, if you gamify it and you go, right, who can get to 5 new contacts first? And then you kind of divide and conquer.
That's a good
then
idea.
Actually, it's kind of like, actually, this is a bit of fun now. And I want to win because we're all a bit competitive. But it means you are still there together. So you arrive together and you still have got that comfort blanket of, I can go and talk to that person if I need to. Yeah. But actually, most people are the same in a networking event. Everyone's there kind of a bit like, who do I talk to, yeah, and where do I interrupt? And so almost also like, not people don't always like role play, but planning what would you, how would you start a conversation is a really good thing to do before you go, so that you're not nervous. You know, okay, I've got some conversation starters and I know what I can tell them about what I'm up to.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, have an idea of what it is that you're looking for. If there is something that you're looking for, it could be a bit of advice, it could be some more information about a company. You could be like laser focused on something as well, like I really want to land a grad job, for example, or I really want to know what grad scheme options you have. That's a really good way to get what you want to get, or to get like actionable and useful information out of those days as well. Or yeah, you can gamify it, like Becky said, like I want to see how many, I don't know, what's a great job title? What's something funky? I want to know how many UX designers I can meet today. Who could talk to me about what they do in the UX UI world. So yeah, there's lots of ways to get a lot out of it, but keep going. Put yourself in those spaces, for sure.
And just get started. And you've even gone onto stages now. And how's that?
It's great. I really like it. I thought my face lit up there.
Yeah, it did.
I really love being able to, what I consider as my almost like contribution to the industry outside of my role and the things that I do in my team or my customers, is being visible. So a lot of times visibility is seen as something where you build your own personal brand and you build your reputation. But actually, I think that just speaking to people like this and like the conversation we're having, speaking to people about what you can do and what's possible and sharing advice and also sharing things that haven't worked as well is really, really helpful, just to give back and to get conversations happening in, and like real connections sparked as well in the industry. So being on stage or being able to talk or give a presentation or to share something that I've learned is, I always find it really, really fun. I love being able to just be quite, I consider myself like quite authentic, like fairly unfiltered, quite natural, and just have the... having the opportunity to be very visible and to be very transparent is something that genuinely makes me like happy, and something I really enjoy in terms of the role that I have and kind of like what I've studied and what I've done, just my background and my history and stuff. It's really great.
Well, and you can see it shine through, having seen you on stage and like, and in this conversation, you can see your passion shines through. And I think like more people need to know they can go and do what they love, and that going to work should be fun. And I think you feel that in your energy, which is brilliant.
Thank you.
Love it.
Are Duolingo, Nike and McDonald's some of your favorite brands? For all the latest marketing and brand news, follow The Drum Mag on Instagram.
What advice would you give to students that would want to go to a big tech company like Amazon, would you say?
I think, I mean, potentially the advice is probably the same, like regardless of the type of company that you want to work at. But being, like genuinely speaking, being very good at something is a good thing. So do it when you are a student. I think it is great to throw yourself into the subjects that you are learning. Like there is no better time to set a foundation for yourself and to understand what it is that you're like really good at and what you have a knack for and what you're naturally able to pick up. And then you can always sort of lean on that and things that you've learned about yourself and also your subjects, so that going forward out of university or out of school, you kind of have an idea of what you as a person, like you as an individual, would be suited to. I think it can be quite difficult for students where you might be studying subjects that you're not super into, and lots of people go to university and then they don't do the things with their degree that they thought that they would, or they don't follow the traditional path. And that's actually okay. But like, still make the most of that time and make the most of that learning time. Whether that is taking certain modules at university, like you might be doing don't know, you could do a fashion degree
yeah.
and then do some business modules on the side and then find that you're like super enterprising and you can, again, you can sort of lean on that later on in life or where you are right now. To be fair, you don't have to defer everything until later, or you don't have to wait until you graduate to start a business, and you don't have to hold back or wait until you think you've achieved something or you have something notable to share to create your LinkedIn profile. Like, kind of just go for it.
Love that. Yeah. Was there anything in like applying to Amazon that stood out as part of the process? Was there any skills that people could start to hone to help them if they get that opportunity to go and have an interview, or they get that opportunity to get in front of somebody?
Yeah. Honestly speaking, there was actually, I think that aside from the technical depth, though it is a technically it's a very quite a rigorous, challenging set of questions, or part of that application process in terms of like the technical screening is quite deep. But one of the things that I've seen being rewarded or looked at really highly at Amazon is like the ability to build something of your own. So to have an idea and actually create it. So that can be people have, you know, done things like building websites, or they've maybe gone into like a charity or an initiative and they've helped them do something like some type of technical enablement, or they've done it could be so many different things that you can build and actually say like, this was my work and this was my idea and I worked with somebody to make it happen. So I think if you can get hands-on with just creating something and building something, that is for sure something that will stick out at a place like Amazon. And also I just think in general.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. The more experience, the more kind of realness that you can bring to those conversations, that especially because I think people always feel disadvantaged when they are fresh from school or university, because you're like, I haven't got the experience. And it's like, well, how can you find a way to go and demonstrate that experience? How can you go and create something, even if it's just a prototype for something, or you start running a blog, or you start running your own TikTok channel for something and selling something? Like, it doesn't have to be that it was the most successful thing ever. It was the initiative that you took, the journey you've been on, the lessons you learned that you can talk about that can really show impact. So I love that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I really love that. What do you think with AI taking off as it is? If you think about your job today, what do you think in 20 years we might look back on and think, oh, I can't believe we used to do that, that we didn't have technology or we didn't have that robot sitting next to us that does it.
Right. Yeah. 20 years is a long time as well. Yeah, that's really big. I think we'll probably look back on the, things like the more tedious and manual but really like mandatory stuff, like having to like do tracking your time or like writing documentation, or even having like things like if you wanted to summarize an email thread and get, rather than actually having to read through emails and understand who said what and when and what actual action items we have, like I think we'll have such a more slick and efficient way of getting those like smaller tasks done. They're really important, but right now they're quite manual, or they're only now that kind of AI and Gen AI is starting to be more widely adopted, we're starting to get those efficiencies. But I think that there is a chance that it just becomes the norm, like you have an automatic way, like your calendar automatically updates because it's scraped a bunch of information from your inbox and it's synced you with your manager and things are just done for you.
I think you're right, because there is still like, you have to think to use AI at the moment. And even like in my inbox, it started saying like at the top, summarize this email. But I think I need to retrain myself to go, do you know what? I'll just trust that, as opposed to, oh, I feel like I need to read the email because I don't want to miss something. But so we've got a journey, as much as tech's got a journey, humans have got a journey to go on, haven't we? To actually start to use these things, trust these things and change our habits.
Yes.
Because they're, especially for people that have been in business a long time, they're ingrained habits that are of a lifetime. You think there's people that work now that actually were around when the email wasn't around.
Yes.
And you, I mean, I can't even imagine life without email. My life revolves around email, the amount of blooming emails we get every day. But actually that used to be a thing. It is interesting. We're on the cusp of some very big changes, I think.
For sure, for sure. And you're absolutely right in how we as people change our actual adoption of the tech. The technology is evolving at an insane rate, if you think about stuff like that, like emails, like going all the way back to like chip, not to make it super techie, but going back to like actual like chips and CPUs and how that technology was around for not a very long time before the rapid kind of improvement started to be made. And now we're seeing something really similar with Gen AI and what Gen AI is able to do. But at every stage, it's required people to start to change their behaviors as well, and how they use and how they consume technology. One of the things that I have a friend at work, and we say this all the time, we always say that technology is easy and people are hard.
Yeah, so it's true.
Trying to change people's minds is hard. Yeah. Trying to make people do things differently to the way that they've been doing them for 20 or 30 or 40 years is really hard. Having the technology is, comparatively, it can be quite an easy thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. I remember listening to a story about like when the mobile phones were first coming about and that you could have a car phone. And people were just like, why would I want a car phone? Mm-hmm. And why would I need a mobile phone? And like, again, now, why would we ever have a phone corded to a wall? We wouldn't. Like, it's something that we hardly ever use as a phone, but it's in our pocket. It's everywhere we go. But yeah, just people take time to adjust. So yeah, people are hard.
People are.
It's good. But it's a fun challenge, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
It's a fun challenge. It's lots of fun. Have you got any other questions or...
No, I think that's it.
Yeah, I think, that's been a wild ride of like learning about where you've come from, what you've learned and where you are now what an exciting journey and more to come. Yes. We're excited to see your career evolve. So
thank you
so much for joining us on Behind the Future. And we're excited to get this episode out in the world.
Yeah, I'm excited too. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
That concludes another brilliant episode of Behind the Future. Thank you so much for listening. You can listen back to other episodes on YouTube or your podcast platform of choice. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, as that will help us to grow this podcast, ensuring we can get the best guests on here for you to learn from. You can also follow us on socials, linked in the show notes for exclusive content. See you on the next episode.